All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
I knew it, Dad. I knew you were still out there. I just never wanted you to feel alone.
I thought I was. And I realized I wasn't.
You got him back?
You told me to.
You're the brave man?
I am.
Yes.
But maybe you can call me Dad.
I knew you'd come back. I believed.
Zen heads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And this is the Cast of Us episode 575.
And this is the shit we do.
It is.
Literally. And this episode, the shit we're doing, we're covering The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, episode 6, The Last Time.
It does feel like the last time. This is our last episode, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, we're done.
It really felt like an ending. I wanted to mention before we get started that if you guys listening just found us recently for this show, or you haven't been around in a while because you weren't watching the spinoffs and you came back for Rick, we're so glad you came back and listened. And if you had a good time, we hope you check out some of the other stuff we've been doing recently. If you look back in your feed, you'll see we started a Walking Dead rewatch with full spoilers. So it's like a retrospective looking back from the perspective of having seen the whole series. And it's been really, really fun.
It's so fun.
And we made it up to where Sophia came out of the barn, and then we paused for The Ones Who Live. So we're going to be continuing, I think, either later this month or early May, depending on how our schedules are. But soon. Yeah. And we also, on this podcast, covered the other spinoffs, The Walking Dead, Dead City with Negan and Maggie, and also Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, which is Daryl en France.
And we
Lucy and I decided to bow out of Dead City. I think you for the same reason as me. Basically, I didn't want to subject everyone to my constant complaints about Negan. I just thought that wouldn't be fun for people. I know you did do one episode, right? Episode two.
I did, and Ben did an amazing job. He was exactly the right person to lead on that show. I think we were both at that point as well. We were quite burnt out from, I think we just done The Last of Us as well, and I was just like, I'm not in the right headspace to talk about Negan.
And watching the series, I thought that was the right decision, because Ben's more of a Negan fan, and you know, I'm a fan of some stuff, but as you guys know, not everything. So anyway, we wanted to have it on the podcast. I'm thankful that Ben came in and covered for us, and he had a rotating guest host, and that was great. And then Lucy and I came back and did the Daryl show, which we liked a lot. We thought it was surprisingly great.
Yeah, which we both were like, we'll cover it. And then we're like, oh, this is fun. And then, got jazzed. It was good.
Yeah, it's like, Daryl in France? What the hell? But if you're, I know some listeners are like, I like Daryl, but not enough to actually watch the series. Give it a shot. Watch the first episode. I think you would know after that one whether you want to continue on.
It'll also make you feel like arty. You're like, oh, well, you know, it's zombies, but it is in Paris. So it's like dead arty.
Yes. It's got a lot of Rita-ness in it. You can tell he had a lot of input because he's an artist. But I would put it solidly third in my rankings of the, I think, 7 Walking Dead spinoffs right after the main show and The Ones Who Live.
Main show, Ones Who Live, Daryl. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, I do want to rewatch World Beyond, having watched this. Like, I know, still up there for me. I liked it a lot.
Me too, yeah. But I like Tales too, probably more than most people.
Yeah, Tales was fun. There was one episode of Tales that like everyone fucking hated, and we were like, this was great. This was so good. It was like the French Amish one. We were like, this is hilarious. And everyone's like, no, it's terrible. Like,
oh. But I just meant, I think there's another spinoff. I can't remember what it was.
No, me neither. But never covered it.
Anyway, Daryl will be back this summer, they say. So we'll interrupt the rewatch once again for that. So just wanted to give you guys a rundown of what we've been covering. If you have been enjoying it, maybe you'll stick around and for some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But that said, let's get into The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. I call it episode 6. I didn't put season because I feel like this might be it.
I'm just going to say it. I don't want another season.
Yeah.
If it comes, I'll cover it. But I don't want it.
Oh, we don't. So we've been saving the news for the listener feedback episode, and we'll do that again this time. But I read, you know, interviews about whether there's a season 2, and the gist I get is that Gimple really wants to do it, and I feel like probably the holdup is Andrew Lincoln and Denai Guerrero, who both said, if there's a great story, then you never know. So I feel like, to me, this was such a great story, you wouldn't want to follow it up with something mediocre.
I could live with like, there's been mooted in the discourse, like, an Avengers that style thing where all the spin-offs come back together. I would love to have that itch scratched, but I do not want this to be broken up again. And that's my, I didn't think I would say this, but I really don't want to see it. I just don't it was just a nice beat to end on.
Yeah, because you're right, because it's about them getting back home, and so you want to see them with the other people, not away again because of something bad that happened.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I would watch a season of The Ones Who Live that's just like domestic Grimes family bliss. Like, I would watch the shit out of that, but I don't think AMC would commission it, and I think they'd want to fuck with us. And
there's
I don't
a
want
rat,
that,
and
so.
They need to get Carol. How did you handle that other rat?
Like, Judas, like a grumpy teenager or something, you know? Yeah, cool. I like it.
What if it was The Ones Who Live starring Gabriel and Aaron? Would you watch a season of that?
If it became, you know, do you mean like if it was sort of like what they've done with Daryl, having it be the Book of Carol and having it be like The Ones Who Live this season featuring the two of them? Yeah, I think so. I know Chris and Jason over at Talking Deadcast are really into that idea of Gabriel and Aaron, because they had an outstanding two-hander with the Terminator before season 11.
Oh, so nice. What if it was The Ones Who Live starring Chris and Jason of the Talking Dead?
I would love that. I'd be so down for that. I would watch the shit out of that. And I tell you what, The Ones Who Live, Lance Hornsby, I mean, I'd show run it.
He's dead.
I would show run it. No, fuck off. No, like, backstory, whatever, resurrection, cool fashion show. I don't know. Yeah, he had a twin. Schmance Schmornsby. Vance right. Hornsby.
Vance, yeah. Lance and Vance. All right, what did you think of this one?
Oh, do you know,
Lance rhymes with romance, by the way. I don't know if you
Lance the Lance romance. What I've been thinking about since I watched this, so I was so stressed out about this. I woke up at like 6, and the clocks went forward. So I woke up at like 7 a.m. on Sunday. We were like staying with Peter's parents, and I was like, I have to watch this fucking episode before I get spoiled.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I did, because the headlines were so fucking spoilery on Monday.
Yeah. I didn't go near,
and I was
I didn't
so
go
stressed.
The internet.
So I had a nightmare about it. I had a nightmare about this fucking show that involved like purple flames. And like, I was so stressed out. So I went into it really up to Hido about the whole thing. There are two zombies inside of me. There is a zombie that wants to nitpick, and there is a zombie that just without shame loved this episode and cried for like half an hour after watching it. And I, you know, they say that the zombie that lives is the one that you feed, so I'm gonna feed the emotional zombie who loved it
the brains,
but
to the zombie.
There were bits where I'm like, yeah, fuck me, that went quickly, and like, wow, the Echelon briefing was quite shit. Like, I just there were bits where
if
I
you
was
watched
like,
The World Beyond, if you hadn't,
if you watched The World Beyond, you're just like,
yeah,
that was, yeah, okay, next. I read a really funny review that said, Beale says, you know, I've given this Echelon briefing 2,273 times. And they're like, okay, one, that's a fuck ton of people to know, like, the top secret. Two, if that's true, he's given that briefing once a day for 7 years. Just really
that's
made me laugh.
He's like, here we go again. Like, all right, let me tell you.
Get the tea, get the sword out. And I just thought that really made me laugh.
He has it on a CD that he just gives to most people.
It's like, couldn't it just be a PowerPoint? Like, stick people like with an explosion, like them dead, us alive, well done.
It makes sense that he's given it, or that many people know it, because everyone who's carrying out these orders, I think, knows it. So you need
and
a whole...
probably dies doing them.
Maybe, but I mean, I think the whole group that was there in the phalanx, that because it kind of had to be that way, that Michonne and Rick just killed a couple thousand people, so they had to be kind of complicit in some way, you know?
Yeah, they had to. But overall, honestly, that ending, I loved it. I loved it. It gave me everything I was hoping for, and I couldn't believe it did. I was so shocked that it actually did. And that made me really happy. How about you? How do you feel? I know we exchanged a text where we were both just like, oh, I'm still crying. But
I watched it in my VR headset the first time, and I was afraid I was going to damage it with my tears.
Oh,
seriously.
Did you run up and give Rick a hug in VR? Were you like, I'm in the family too? Jenny's like, what are you doing? And you're like, nothing. Just
no, I'm watching
my family.
Down. I loved it so much. I you know, there were definitely some department of suspensions of disbelief on a big scale in it, but I was so satisfied with it that I was almost joyous, like, ha, that's so funny. Yeah. You know, it wasn't even like, this is lame. I don't, this is taking me out of it. It was like, okay, good. I'm glad they just skated over that so we could get to this ending that we got.
Right. I was like, because when it got to like 7 minutes to go and like everything had been resolved, I was like, oh my god, we're going back. And I just got so excited.
Right.
I was
I know. I heard, see, I haven't listened to Watching Dead, the Bald Move guys, in a while. But somebody told me that they started off kind of liking it, but they've just been raking this series over the coals, right? And that's what they tend to do with The Walking Dead, and I love them for it. And I know that some people who listen to Watching Dead, this is back in the day, they would just think well, it was me and Karen at the time, but like, you guys are idiots. Like, God, you just love everything and you don't care and all this. And I'm like, hey, we're two different flavors. Like, I'm here to appreciate and to, you know, enhance your experience of it, not pick it apart. But I mean, I those guys are really fun to listen to. But anyway, I think it's funny.
Like, feed the zedge that gives your life meaning. And if that is joy, then take it. And this was just pure joy.
Their zed is snarky and they give it lots of brains. And that's, that's funny.
That's fine. Whereas I want to feed my non-cynical Zed, who just sat on the bed crying Judith got her family back for half an hour and then had to go for Easter lunch with my in-laws, so like, it's fine.
It did feel rushed. I guess, I mean, it's fast-paced for sure. I did not expect them to find out what the CRM was up to and put a stop to it all in one episode. That really surprised me. But on the other hand, I think the whole series has been fast-paced except for maybe episode four, the one, you know, that Denai Guerrero wrote. And so it fit in with that. It's been fast paced the whole way through. A couple of years went by in the very first episode. Then a year went by in the Michonne Nat episode. You're right. Yeah. It's been quick.
Absolutely.
I think it would have been good to get more about the people in the Civic Republic who were actually impacted by this. We didn't really see the impact of the CRM on them at any time. And the aftermath was all handled in voiceover. It was very satisfying voiceover, but we didn't get to see any of it. I feel like the series could have been 10 episodes and that would have probably been best. You know,
I would watch The Ones Who Live, Ben Shiro and Esteban take the city. That would make me really happy. I'd want to see that.
They could have just included a little and did a few more episodes, you know, not another season, but
I think, so my first point was feeding the bad Zed. I put my points that I am a bit like about. One is that Jadis had time to make her room an art studio. She was like, I wish I'd died an artist. I don't do art anymore. And then they opened the door and I'm like, huh? It's like art school in here. I was like, what the fuck?
I did like, though, that she had that side of herself still.
The pictures were cool. Like the Gabriel and the General Beale. And there were some like anguished faces. And I'm like, are these the people she's killed? Like, I'd like to go back and zoom in to see if I could spot other faces. But it just made me laugh. It's like, It was a brand new facility. And she's like, I took all my art with me. I'm like,
That's right. It's not even her main place. She's like,
I'm just going to visit. And she's like, I live here now. And I'm like, you did a lot of art in like, what, 2 days? Like, anyway.
She brought it. But I love that the dossier was up the cat's butt. That was awesome.
And that is a callback, which I loved, because Rick brought cat that looked exactly like that back from the junkyard for Michonne to make up for the cat statue she lost at the prison. So Jadis, if she knew, was very petty about that, which I thought was quite funny.
That I didn't realize that. So Jadis had made the one in the junkyard too, probably as an artist.
So yeah. I listened to the listener feedback episode. I was really delighted with it, and Veronica made a really good point that Jadis, if she had just died randomly on duty, everyone would have found out about Alexandria. So I was thinking about that when I was doing my rewatch. I was like, pretty fucking stupid thing to do, really, wasn't it?
I'd been thinking about, like, it's important that Jadis stay alive.
On my bad said list, I also have, there was a bit of Gimple speak in this, particularly with Rick and Beale, that I was a bit like, okay, like I was just like, we could do this with a bit less Gimple speak, but fine, whatever. It happened. It has not been an overly Gimply season, so it passes.
I think it's been Gimply in the best way, because I always want to stand up for him, and I think he's got a lot of strengths, and they were all on display in this. And he made a great team with Denai Guerrero in particular, I think, and probably Andrew Lincoln as well.
Two of them to rein him in was good. I think they balanced it rather than rein in.
That's
like,
always
balanced,
the case. You need, I mean, look at the Beatles, you know, they were better together.
How quickly it all resolved, I'm just going to find funny, because it was just funny that everything was resolved in one episode. I'm just like, that's inherently hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like, they've built up this big bad
over
so much
years.
And they're like, nah.
And like, characters from other, like Isabel from Fear, it's like, well, she escaped them, but the whole
it's
world
wild.
Beyond, and yeah, it's like,
well, this
over.
Is the thing that
Rick Grimes came, it's over.
Right, this is the thing that I spoke a bit with Jenny Ryan about this, like, the world beyond was kind of pointless. It's like, what? I mean, yeah, I'm not going to say too much if you've not seen World Beyond, but I'm a bit like, oh.
It was intended to come after the first Rick Grimes movie that never was made. And so I don't know if seeing it in that light makes more sense, but I guess we would have to know what that. I also read that the first movie wasn't even going to have Michonne in it, except maybe at the end. So it was different.
I hope the World Beyond crew are doing okay. I assume, I wondered if we would get a Kublik cameo with the Hyhegians all being there, but no.
The main reason why I hadn't been spoiling World Beyond points was because I didn't want to give away what did end up being a plot twist in this season, which is that the CRM were the ones that killed Omaha. That was the Echelon briefing.
Yeah.
I mean, people probably suspected, but I just didn't want to lay it out there. But now that it's over, I don't mind saying some points from World Beyond, one of which is that at the end, some of the characters were on their way to Portland to warn them because we knew that the CRM was going for Portland next. And now we don't know what happened to those characters, Elton, Asha, and Iris, I think.
Yeah. And
I guess they're fine because nothing happened. But did they ever make it there? Were they just like coming up to...
I kind of want to know. I would watch a little spin-off episode about this.
Yeah, webisode, come on.
Speaking of the Echelon briefing, I just feel like it was bigged up a lot and it just wasn't that great. Like, it was fine. And I loved, you know what, Terry O'Quinn brought it. I liked the scene well enough. But I just felt like the briefing itself was a bit like, and?
I don't agree. I think...
Really?
I mean, hey, we don't have to agree as always, but I just think because we watched World Beyond, it had way less impact. But if you learned from this that the CRM is going to kill everyone else in the world, that's basically what it was. That's a big deal.
I'm interested to see what listener feedback says about this, because surely we'll have people who didn't know. But I just felt a bit like, I think, I don't remember if it was Veronica or Dodie that said, the biggest twist would be if there was something in the briefing that made us think, oh, shit, there's a point there.
Yeah.
But I don't think... closest I came was when Beale said to Rick, I can protect the people you love and bring them here. And I thought, oh, that could...
But that wasn't really the briefing.
But that wasn't the briefing.
But no, I mean, I think it's pretty compelling, especially given that... I mean, we learned... in the Echelon briefing, but also in World Beyond, that the CRM has these modelers that they're like statisticians or something that predict what's going to happen based on whatever factors. And they've said that humanity has 14 years to live. And so this is our motivation to try to beat the odds. And the way that we're going to do that is to kill everyone else because they could be a threat. And we're just going to keep this community of compliant people that we've specifically gathered together, all bees. And then we're going to be the military that protects them and kills everyone else. I mean, to me, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. I found it underwhelming. If I'd been one of the 2,274th person to get it, I think my reaction might have been a bit less than whelmed. I don't know. I was just like, is that it? Like, I feel like if you're that far into the organization and you don't have a suspicion that that's the kind of thing they're doing, then I don't know. Which leads me to, Rick and Michonne should have died a bunch in this episode. Like, they should have died at least three different points of this episode. And going in, I was so sure one of them was going to die that I was absolutely, like, in knots about it. The blanket and water thing was tenuous. Rick exploding the Zeds with a fucking hand grenade 2 feet away from him and not getting bit was also tenuous. Mm. But I don't fucking care because I'm so happy that they both lived. But if we were going to pick holes in it, you could say there was like a million points
where
and probably should have died in this episode.
Randy made a good point in the chat. Well, maybe it's a good point that in most movies, you see people dive on grenades and then they're able to save anyone else from getting hurt. Just one body in the way. And here Rick had, I think, three zombies in the way. So maybe you could...
True. I was also very worried that Rick was going to reveal he'd been bitten when they got on top of the
crate thingy container. Yeah, yeah. I was so worried throughout the whole episode.
I have never been so stressed in my fucking life as I was watching this.
Which was one of the reasons why it was such a great episode, because throughout The Walking Dead, we were never worried about Rick's survival until his final episode, because it was broadcast that Andrew Lincoln was leaving. But aside from that, we just weren't. And now we were so worried, and I could feel it just chatting with people online. And it was a collective Walking Dead family anxiety. And then to have us throughout the whole episode, they just ramped that up, you know, in the whole Echelon briefing. It's very tense and he keeps grabbing at his knife and you're wondering what's going to happen. And then he fucking grabs his knife and kills him, which I totally didn't expect. And then they fight and I'm like, oh shit. And then, I mean, even in the first place, like that they're going to go in there and try to get this dossier and the Echelon briefing, it's dangerous. They're going into the belly of the beast. So it's high risk. Then it ramps up, of course, as we knew it would. And they find out that they're going to attack Portland. So they decide to put a stop to it. And just every little moment, the fact that they had these flashbacks, that made me feel like,
we're dead.
This is your life.
We're all dead.
Like, yeah, this is they're showing this. We're all dead. Rick wanted to go, like, why don't we just go home?
And Michonne wanted to stay. Yeah. I was like, fuck.
And just the fact that they were having this conversation made it feel like, they might regret this or something, right? So they knew that we were thinking it, and they kept seeding us. And then they even, like, had all these moments that you just mentioned that were ridiculous. Like, it looked like Rick blew up, and then he's fine. And then even they had to add the thing about them getting up on the shipping container. So all of that anxiety just built and built and built, and then to have this payoff where did make it, it made it so much sweeter than it would have already been great, but it was even better because of all that. I feel like
everything you've ever wanted for these characters is going to happen. I was like, and I did. The other two things on my list of bad Zed were Thorne's change of heart. Like,
I know.
It was right. There is hope. I'm like, well,
hell changed your mind?
I really hope that in my last moments on Earth, I don't, like, go back on everything I believe for my whole life. Like, it is right. It is this. And then gonk it. I'd rather just go out being like, yeah, most of my beliefs were pretty much held up by what I experienced, you know?
Yeah. When you, right after you, before you die, you'll be like, it's true. Men should run the world.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, feminism was a joke. Conk it. Like, I should have just done this instead. But no.
I mean, I guess it was because Michonne said, love doesn't die, right before she killed her. I don't know.
And then she goes, watch. And I wrote LOL, bye, bitch. At that point, I was like, no. But everything, and I think the last one that really did make me laugh, I kind of loved, was everything that happened off screen with the briefing of, like, frontliner force in command and all casualties of incident, shocking revelations, emergency oversight, infantry units, immediate reform, overturning guidance, free movement, city will welcome citizens, airless survivors in our community. And I'm like, so that all happened in, what, 45 seconds? I'm like, great. Guess we're not watching any of that.
Yeah. I mean, there's a part of me that's that would have just drawn things out and... I don't know.
I mean, reform is inherently quite boring. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I'm with you on that.
I mean, I would have, liked to just see just some signs of real world impact of it. But I actually liked the voiceover debriefing at the end.
This is the thing. I liked it and also found it frustrating at the same time, but mainly loved it. But it's when I feed the little analytical Zed, it goes, that was kind of like too convenient, right? And I'm like, no, it was great. It was great because then we saw more of Judith.
It felt like the end of a lot of movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the end of my bad Zed list. That was my first point, was just the nitpicks.
Okay. I'll tell you my bad Zed list, which is a lot the same. And then I'll do another point, if that's all right. So, again, huge Department of Suspension of Disbelief, but the episode was so satisfying in all other ways that I didn't really care. I almost felt joyful about these. But that Beale happens to spend alone time before each battle, completely unguarded, never interrupts that time, except this one exception. He'll take this guy who's the first A he's ever given the echelon briefing to, and he's not been quite sure where he's coming from and has tried to escape four times. But I'll bring
and who's
him in
obviously, and, like, quite unhinged, like, let's face it, like, quite unhinged,
like, like, that seems like a good idea. Oh, damn you, Okafor, why did I follow your advice on that one?
That line, I laughed out loud. Damn you, so Okafor. I was stabbed. Like, great 10 out of 10.
I shouldn't have listened to you. Oh, died.
Okafor smiles down from heaven, like, oh.
I mean, I genuinely feel like that was the best writing of the whole episode for that line.
Damn you, Okafor.
That was so good.
So good.
Michonne stumbles into this briefing about what's happening in Portland. I guess Cascadia base is mostly is everyone who's had the echelon briefing, but still, it's kind of like Squid Game, if you've seen that, or even Star Wars in the Death Star, where all the bad guys are wearing masks, you know, it's a stormtrooper, so it's easy to infiltrate and go unnoticed. It was like that.
Also, who stitched her uniform? Like, I noticed this in the kind of bits we see of them having actually planned stuff. I'm like, so they stitched the uniform together. That's really funny, because there's like a little sewing kit out, and I'm like, well, I'm assuming Michonne did that, because I don't think Rick could do it with one hand. But anyway, that really made me laugh.
Oh, what do you mean stitched it? Like,
they stitched the red bits on. So there must have been a regular stormtrooper uniform there, and then they had to stitch the red piping on to make it look Like, she was meant official. To be there. But, yeah. Okay. It's one of those things where I'm like, they obviously, they show the, like, really scenic, like, sex scene, but they don't show the, like, presumable hours of sewing. Like, anyway, it made me laugh.
This is more of a general one. If the CRM planned to kill all the people, all the communities they came across, why did they design their logo around the concept of three communities? I've already said, maybe it was plausible deniability.
I think they just had one really good designer who was like, I don't think you should do this. I don't think you should, you know, kill. And they're like, nope, don't care. Then he got killed and now they're stuck with all the logos.
So. Yeah. Oh, well, we'll think of some other thing that represents. I think it was lucky no one was guarding this huge cache of chlorine gas canisters so Rick and Michonne could just go in and rig it, and also that the troops were all gathered in one place.
Oh, chill. Like, that's how I keep my gas canisters. I'm just like, yeah, just unguarded, like, whatever.
And while we're talking about the gas canisters, I'm pretty sure we saw those in World Beyond getting ready to be shipped out to Portland. Like,
Didn't they thwart it?
Oh, well, there must have been other ones.
Oh, man.
This is just a small one, but how come Rick left his prosthesis? Why didn't he?
I think he was like, I don't need anything you gave me anymore. And I'm like, you've also got a blade in it. It's uniform. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that seemed weird. That when Thorne confronted Rick and Michonne and she goes, you go back and undo what you did. I mean, no, follow them, find out what they did. That's kind of silly.
Thorne's like, I'm phoning it in. Yeah. I don't want to find out.
I don't even want to deal with you guys. Just
I don't want to deal with you anymore.
There's an explosion, you know, that lets out all the chlorine gas and then cut to commercial. And all of a sudden, all the soldiers are zombies shambling around.
Except for Thorne.
Yeah,
except Rick and Michonne.
Thorne and Rick and Michonne because they were under tarp.
If only they'd known.
And I mean, it made a little tiny bit more sense with Rick and Michonne, but not much. But Thorne, why did she survive being out in the open? Because she quickly put her mask on, but no one else did. Why didn't anyone else? Okay, whatever.
Rick's like, she's got a mask. I'm like, but what the? Oh.
That was the most ridiculous thing in the whole episode to me,
really. Yeah,
that was
really dumb.
And then, her sudden change of heart. And then Judith and RJ meet them in a field. With no supervision. I guess Judith can handle it, but why not go to Alexandria? Who brought them to this field? Of course, it's because in Alexandria, which is actually Sonoy, you know, they now regularly the inhabitants of Sonoy. It's a real town. They sit out on their porches with shotguns in case any camera crew show up. Never again, I've heard. No, I'm just kidding.
They're real porch dicks in Sonoy. I was a bit like, you could have had like a sneaky Ezekiel or Carol there. Like, oh,
it might have lessened the emotional impact, but it just felt weird. Like a field and two little kids running out of the forest. Yeah. Fine.
Oh.
So those are mine. But can I do another fresh point?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's the others, feeding the others out in my head. The main overarching theme of The Walking Dead, or at least one of the main ones, I felt like this series felt like an end to The Walking Dead in a way that the Walking Dead finale itself didn't in some way, because it's Rick. It made me feel sad because when series that I love end, I feel like I broke up with somebody, and I didn't quite have that feeling with The Walking Dead. And I think it was in part because I knew that there was more coming with Rick. And now we may never see him again. You know, it's sad.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I really do. Yeah.
I felt like it was a good ending though. So I want that. I'd rather have that than not.
This is what I wanted at the end of the main show was this scene. But I actually really liked what we got at the end of the main show with Daryl, and I thought they did it really well. And I can understand why Andrew Lincoln was like, we can't have me come back in at the end and kind of.
Yeah. No, I'm glad they didn't.
Else.
They should have just left him out completely, but
Yeah, but I had the same kind of completion sadness. Feeling of like, oh, this is really it now because they're home and that's that. And we will never maybe see that again. And I think it's also because there's part of me that wants it to be that way because I don't want this to get fucked up for them. Like, I want that to be their happiness.
Right. It's almost, there's a part of me as a podcaster like, oh, hope other people don't feel that way and decide they're done with The Walking Dead, because we still have Daryl and Negan left. But there's a part of me that also wishes we didn't have that, because I want a good ending and this was one, mm-hmm. you know.
Maybe Daryl will end with him coming back and getting his reunion with Rick, and then...
Yeah, I know. Really hope so.
Because they deserve a reunion. Because, yeah, they absolutely. They, do. They really yeah. do. And then...
Even though one listener thinks that that's a slight to Michonne, but I...
It is. It isn't. Like, you can love different people for different reasons.
No, I want them all to be reunited. It doesn't take anything away from Michonne at all. It's not a slight. But anyway, so another way that it feels like an ending is thematically, because one of the main themes of The Walking Dead has always been, how far are we to go to protect the people you care about, and can you come back from mm-hmm. those dark things? And I think this series focuses on, quote, dark things, meaning being calloused over to the point where you don't care about anyone, or mm-hmm. or it doesn't have to be about callous, but giving up on people, like the whole thing with Michonne and Thorne, like, you've given up and I haven't. And coming back from that means having empathy and compassion again, and, as corny as it is, love. I think it's no coincidence that this series kind of sounds like The Ones Who Love. And it brings Rick back full circle. He started off as a loving man. Then he became more like the CRM, where he would mm-hmm. kill innocents to protect the ones he cared about. And then he came back around to loving. There was a Nat voiceover in the beginning where he said...
Yeah, I don't know how to... Oh, you go for it.
He said, I know how to build things and I know how to burn things, but it takes more than that at the end of the world. And that's sort of a slight against the CRM. And Thorne says, in a dead world, love is dead. Michonne says, love doesn't die, and then kills Thorne. but Beale said, we are the dead ones. You know, we're kind of like them, the zombies, which I feel like ties in with the name of the series, The Walking Dead. It's not just the zombies. Mm-hmm. It's the people who've given up on love. And Beale says, the sword that kills is the sword that gives life, but that's choosing who you want to save, but then killing everyone else, whether they're an overt threat or not. It's devaluing the lives of people that you don't personally know. And
just denying the potential for other ways of thinking and being.
And there's a flashback when he said that to a lot of the dark things that Rick did, killing Thomas, the prisoner, with his machete to the top of the head, biting Joe's throat out. In my opinion, it would have been more apt to show Rick being aggressive towards innocents, like the Grady Hospital people. He wanted to go in and kill them, but he didn't, so they can't really show that. He shot at one Kingdom guy. He didn't even know who he
Orange
was.
Orange backpack.
Orange backpack, yes. Or even, it's debatable, but killing the saviors in their sleep without knowing if some of them were coerced to do what, they were. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's too complicated to explain all that in a flashback, but that those are the things that I felt were more like he's really lost himself. And when he said in this episode to Beale, I never lost my son, I lost myself. He brought me back. My wife brought me back. I think it was during the rewatch that we talked about Carl's final letter to Rick, but I think it's worth looking again. So if you don't remember, Carl was bitten and he wrote letters to people before he died. And for Rick, he wrote, I wanted to kill Negan. I wish I did. Maybe it would have been done. I don't think it's done now. You went out there again, but I don't think they surrendered. He's talking about the war with the saviors. I don't think they will surrender. Mm-hmm. There are workers in there, Dad, meaning saviors. Mm. They're just regular people, old people, young people, families. You don't want them to die, Dad. We're so close to starting everything over, and we have friends now. It's that bigger world you used to talk about, the kingdom, the hilltop. There's got to be more places, more people out there, a chance for everything to change and keep changing. Everyone giving everyone the opportunity to have a life, a real life. You have to find peace with Negan. You have to find a way forward somehow. We don't have to forget what happened, but you can make it so it doesn't happen again. And nobody has to live this way, that every life is worth something. Start everything over. Show everyone they can be safe again without killing, that it can feel safe again, that it can go back to being birthdays, schools, jobs, and even Friday night pizza somehow. and walks with a dad and a three-year-old. I'm kidding, emotionally, holding hands. Make that comeback, Dad, and go on those walks with Judith. She'll remember them. I love you, Carl. So I just think that, I mean, this whole series, The Walking Dead, I've preached that it's important to have compassion and mercy and vulnerability in a smart way, but not to just become a ruthless, cold, untrusting, badass killer. And I feel like this episode is validating that viewpoint and even tying it into the whole theme of The Walking Dead. If you don't do this, you are The Walking Dead. If you forget about love, then you're The Walking Dead. And that's what Beale is preaching, killing innocents to protect your own life. But Rick still cares about people he doesn't yet know, about strangers. And I think that's one of his biggest strengths. And when he lost that, which he did, he was still my favorite character on the show, but only in the way that I like flawed characters. Like, I didn't approve of it, and I wouldn't have wanted to like be his friend if I was in that world. Mm-hmm. But now he's come back from that, and I admire him as a person again, as well as a character, you know? So that's why I feel like it's kind of full circle and really ties a lot of things into the series together. Yeah.
I had a point. I kind of want to talk about the ending, even though it's the best bit of the episode. And I was like, we'll talk about it.
Do it.
End.
Yeah. It doesn't matter to me.
Oh, it destroyed me. Like seeing Rick's hand shaking. Yes. And then when we saw just a little bit of Judith, I'm like, they're not going to crap out and not show us actual Judith.
I thought the same thing.
And then
they had to pay Kaylee Fleming $10 million, I read, to do this.
Worth it. Pay her more.
I'm just kidding.
She's so great. I love her so much. Yeah. And she just knocks it out the park. I just loved the whole scene. I've written the best scene ever happens despite RJ being there, which is probably not fair on that poor little kid.
Lovely. They used him well. There was a lot of stillness. And
silence.
Yeah, but it was good.
He would be. Yeah. I was thinking about the dynamics of that. You'd just be like,
they handled it so well, I thought.
They did it so well. And like, even the way, like, there was something so natural about the way Michonne was talking to the kids, like, you got big and I'm sorry and stuff like that. And the fact that they were both. Just the way Rick and Michonne both run towards them so desperately and urgently, but then Rick's hanging back and he doesn't know what to do and he's like fiddling with his buttons and the music is so good. And the kids looking grown up makes sense with the time difference, like the time that
it
has
adds
passed
to the poignance of it.
Yeah, and Kaylee Fleming does look like Laurie. I think you can really buy that she is Laurie's daughter, just the way that, and I just thought like what Rick must feel in that moment looking at Judith and everything.
Like, wow, you were a baby last time I saw you.
Aha! And like in the toddler. Rewatch, Judith is, 8 weeks in utero or something? So it's really strange to think about all this time having passed since that and the things that happened with Laurie's pregnancy and with Judith and Laurie dying and things like that. I cried so much. Just seeing Judith look so happy running towards her parents killed me. I know I come off as like mean sometimes and like not emotionally in tune with stuff about families and things, but like, oh my god, I was gone. I cried for like half an hour.
I'm happy to hear.
I've watched the last 7 minutes 6 times and I will keep watching them. I might not watch the rest of the episode again, but I will watch those last 6 minutes because it was so good. It's like mind masturbation of like, this is great. This is so good. Don't say that. Don't put that in because it's about kids and it's going to sound like I have bad feelings about children. That's not true. But it is scratching an itch.
No, I'm getting that you have great feelings about children.
Yeah.
You were touched.
But it is like, I'm very touched. Yes. It's everything I've wanted since Rick left the show and I loved it. And anyone who didn't get joy from it can away because
must have a heart of stone.
No,
it's okay.
I could have again, bad Zed that I'm feeding. I could have lived without the I believed line. I thought maybe you can call me dad would have been a nice place to leave it. But you know,
must have been a callback because Scott Kimball always calls back.
Well, this whole show has been about like belief and choosing to believe rather than choosing to not believe. And then
something a little kid might say.
It was so cute. Unless RJ in his little hat. Oh.
Yeah. Aww. See, I mean, I thought beat by beat, it was done so well. Like you said, Rick's hand was shaking in the helicopter and Michonne holds it when they're looking at the drawing of Carl. And then Michonne hugs both the kids. And that made so much sense because she's their mom and they know her.
She's their mom, yeah.
They feel connected with her, especially RJ, because he's never even met Rick. But no. Judith did know him when she was a toddler. I don't know. Maybe she was like up to like 7 or 8. I forget.
No, she would have been 3 or 4.
Yeah, okay. I think that sounds right. Yeah. And still, you'd remember and you'd have some feelings there. It would be very, and she did clearly. And so then they connected after these two kids had a chance to just love on their mom for a minute. Then to have Judith and Rick connect was beautiful. And then RJ and Rick face each other. Oh, I can't even talk about this. No. And he says, "You're the brave man." And he goes, "I am," which I'm glad he said that instead of hemming and hawing about it. And then he tweaked RJ's hat, which just
like
evokes,
he used to do with Carl.
Yeah, just son and Carl, which is kind of sad. It reminds you he's not there, but also RJ smiled at it. You know, it was like a fatherly thing to do. Mm-hmm. And he said, "But maybe you can call me dad." And he said, "I need to come back. How I believe." And then they hug and I lost it. Then they all hugged. And that, of course, reminds us of Rick and Lori and Carl early on when he first found them. So it's happy and sad at the same time, which is very Walking Dead, but mostly happy.
I just kept saying all day, I was like, Pierre, and he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Judith got her family back." And he's, like, he's just like, "Why are you?" And I'm just like, "It's just really great. It's just really great."
That's awesome.
Oh, I was just like, "Guess what?" And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "Judith got her family back." And he's like, "Good Lord." Like, we're still talking about
He watched it with you, right?
He watched it. I mean, it was 7 a.m. He loved it. He was like, "Oh, that's really nice." We both have a soft spot for Judith because we used to babysit a kid who looks really like Judith, and she was a kick-ass girl. And yeah, we both got on really well with her. And yeah, she always reminds us of her. But I just think, Kayleigh Fleming, man. I hope she has such a good career ahead of her because she's fantastic.
Me too. Yeah, it's good that she.
And I realized she and Andrew Lincoln have never shared the screen. And they managed to play that really convincingly. Just loved it.
I don't even know for sure if she's even met him before this. Because he didn't go to
he wouldn't have done cons.
Conventions that much, yeah. Maybe. All right.
Aww. All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
I'm going to talk about what the Echelon briefing ended up being. We kind of touched on it a little bit, but in the first episode of this series, they showed us reports that the people of Omaha were mysteriously killed and the CRM was investigating. And if you watched World Beyond, you knew that the CRM actually destroyed Omaha. And the scientist of the CRM, I guess scientists or statisticians or something, had predicted that the Omaha group would eventually fall to disease and famine. And that would spread. They were worried that would spread to the CRM and threaten their survival. So there's a celebration called Monument Day that commemorated the start of the zombie apocalypse. And so a lot of people would be outside and gathered together, and they chlorine gas them in part to prolong the time before the reanimation so they could get more research specimens too. So it was double dark.
But the chlorine gas that they used here, everyone came back straight away.
Right. That's right. Hmm. Plot hole. but given that part of the story of the ones who live is about Rick potentially thinking he could do well with the CRM, like get them to change the things he didn't like so they could be a force for good. I thought the idea that the CRM actually killed 90,000 people, and they're keeping that a secret in this series, is a twist, you know? And it was so weird. So,
well, I'm glad that we know that Rick didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, right. There was a bit at the start where we were like, did he know? He didn't know. We were all pretty sure he didn't, but just in case.
Yeah. And I mean, my point in talking about this right now is that you and I decided not to talk about that in the main body of the podcast. We only had it at our echelon briefings at the end in case mm-hmm. there were people who didn't watch World Beyond. And it felt like a spoiler to me. It felt like a plot twist that would be a spoiler if you hadn't watched World Beyond. So I am curious now that it's all said and done and you're listening to me, if you didn't watch World Beyond, you didn't listen to our spoiler sections at the end, did that come off as a spoiler at all? I'm sure people might have suspected it anyway because it's the bad organization, you know, maybe we shouldn't have bothered keeping it a secret, you know.
I think we did the right thing. I think it's always better to give people the option to opt in or out.
But I want to hear from the listeners, too, though, if you have an opinion.
No, I don't. I think I'm right. I'm joking.
Just write to me separately.
I don't care to know.
I'm glad we did it that way, but I'm curious. I'm just curious what people say.
Yeah.
So then the whole time I was hoping when we did that, we, for one, would get the echelon briefing. You know, it wasn't a given that we would. If and when we did, that we would learn not only about this Omaha thing, but some other crazy things that we didn't already know about from watching World Beyond. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really learn all that much more.
We really didn't.
So
I was just expecting just a little. Oh, no, hang on. There was one thing. He said that they had, I'm going to find the right words, they had embeds in communities.
Spies.
Yeah. And I'm like, that would be an interesting twist if somebody right. that we'd known the whole time, hashtag Enid, Lance. Well, Lance, Enid, yeah. Actually, fuck me, I hadn't thought about that. Lance would have been a great embed.
He could have been.
But he could have been, because he does threaten Pamela with, you have no idea the relationships.
Maybe he was built. An embed and the CRM scientists have figured out how to bring people back to life. And he'll be the first one.
That would be amazing.
That'd be such a great story, wouldn't it?
So I could write it. I mean, I've got free time now, so I could write it. Like, if you want to let me know.
You should write a book.
But yeah, I did wonder if there was, that surprised me. I was like, oh, I wonder if there was someone in the community at Alexandria. But then I was like, was that Jadis?
It's
like,
funny
I don't know.
You said Enid. No, I mean, honestly, Alexandria, I don't think so, because a whole point of this was to keep the existence of Alexandria a secret, and it's small too. So I would guess no, but Commonwealth, I would think so.
Yeah.
It's 50,000 people. If they don't know about the Commonwealth, they suck.
I would fucking love a Tales from the Walking Dead that showed like Beale talks about a civil war. I'd love to have seen some scenes from that.
Yeah.
I'd love to see an episode where we found out how the Commonwealth was related to the CRM. Yeah, I don't know. I just, there's
they
so many
a comic book of
potential
this
bits here. Yeah, they really should. They really should. It'd be a great graphic novel.
So more, we knew from World Beyond that the CRM was on their way to kill everyone in Portland too. And we also knew that they cared about particularly gifted children, but here we have this child evacuation protocol. I don't know if we knew about that. The destruction of Portland, that the spies you just mentioned had embedded themselves in the school system so they could prepare to airlift at 10% of the kids away. And that shows you they only care about the really smart kids. And this voiceover talking about the mission says any one of them could prove to be the difference in our civilization's survival. So they just picked out the kids that they thought were the brightest.
We had inklings of that in World Beyond, but not explicit.
Yeah. I mean, with what's her name? Hope.
Hope. Yeah.
Yeah. They were interested in her. Beale also mentioned that until recently, they supplied test subjects for scientific experiments to CRM-run labs, and we saw some flashes of World Beyond with zombies and labs, so we knew that from World Beyond. What he didn't mention, but I'm going to spoil now, is that, because I think it's not really that much of a spoiler, is what they used the A's for was the test subjects. So some, at least one listener had said, you know, if they're just going to kill the A's, why did they want Jadis? Why did they say if you're going to trade someone to get access, it has to be an A? That's what they said originally. And that's because they needed test subjects. And they would, like, have a zombie bite a test subject and then study how long he turned and things like that. Like, they would kill them, but in pursuit of studying the zombie virus. And Beale said that happened up until recently. And if you want to know why that stopped, watch World Beyond.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we learned a couple of sort of new things. The thing about the spies, and I think that could mean there's spies in the Commonwealth. And he said throughout the continent and the world. So possibly also, and we might actually see something about this in the Pouvoir des Vivants. Oh. Community in France, right? Maybe.
Wait, wait.
And he spelled it out that the CRM was pretty much going to kill everyone else in the world, which means eventually they would get to the Commonwealth in Alexandria. He said the CRM destroys communities for resources, for strategic superiority, and to ensure the city's secrecy and security above all. Well, we knew they destroyed communities, but he went on to say, in 18 hours, we're going to take our final action to leave us as the supreme force on this continent, maybe the world, meaning kill Portland. And then they would call it a mysterious tragedy, use it as an excuse to declare martial law over the civic republic, then march across the country and eliminate any growing competition. Now, to me, that was the big point that, I mean, you could have suspected it, but they really spelled out, we're going to kill everyone. Except for Philadelphia, you know, and so that gives me like, makes me think about a higher level view of why do this? It really makes sense why they separated A's and B's now, because they wanted a community of compliant people, B's, who were no threats, wouldn't cause any trouble. Mm-hmm. And then Beale, he said at some point, this was all my idea. So that's why I feel like it's cult-like. He at first wanted to be the only leader and to give all the orders and mm-hmm. everyone else would be compliant. And then you would have this military that was also compliant. They would kill everyone else on the planet just in case they were a threat to try to save these people with it. Now it's a dumb plan. You need leaders within an organization, but I at least sort of understand what the point of all of it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting when he said, the decisions were his and it was his alone to sit yeah. with. And he talked about the briefing as a way of like sharing that weight with people. And he's a very interesting character in that sense. And I think the cult like mentality really does map onto that quite neatly.
And I think this episode really shows why they got someone like Terry O'Quinn to play the part, because mm-hmm. I liked the way they spaced out the echelon briefing throughout the first part of the episode. And and I thought the way he played it was great, because he didn't come off like a mustache twirling villain. In fact, he came off kind of likable almost, but that's the most dangerous kind of person, because if you listen to what he's saying, it's fucked up.
And a little bit insecure when he's like, hey, I know it wasn't cutting a guy's throat out with my teeth, but like, you know, it's still pretty bad, right? And I'm like,
well, that was weird to me, because he just said that he killed like thousands of people, and I'm like, yeah, that's a lot worse.
Yeah,
that's way worse.
Yeah. And yeah, Terry O'Quinn, a cynical Zed would say they didn't use him enough in the show, but I would say the way they used him was great. And I thought their fight scene in particular was very strong. And he was an amazing Zed.
Yeah. And really I agree with both those statements. The way they used him was great, but they didn't use him quite enough for my liking.
For a long time in the show, we didn't see that many named characters as Zeds. But then I think in the Kang era, we got a bit more because the Deke we saw as a Zed, and then we Who? Saw in the Sadiq.
Oh, Sadiq, yeah.
Yeah, we saw him as a Zed. We saw Lance Hornsby as a Zed, and here we got to see General Beale as a Zed. And I always like it when actors have to goof out and be zombies. I find it really entertaining to watch, and I like seeing what kind of zombies they are, and I thought Terry O'Quinn was a great one.
I kind of wondered if how Terry O'Quinn felt about that. Was he like excited about it? Or
you've got, surely if you're going on a show like The Walking Dead, you're like, oh yes.
Because they asked him in an interview if he watched some Walking Dead to get ready for this. And he said, not really. He said, you know, I didn't need to. And I forget exactly what he said, but it made sense to me, because Beale would not know anything that any of these characters went through. He would just know about his own path, which I'm sure, you know, Terry O'Quinn had in his head, the character backstory.
Well, I had a big long point about, my longest point actually was about Beale, because I thought what we learned about him was kind of fascinating.
Cool.
This idea of like the general who never had to do his service, who wants to do it now. He loves a wee monologue, which I thought was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. I alone decided the path ahead, and I alone want to feel the weight of it. And he talks about Rick coming back, and he's like, and I'm humbled by that. And I'm like, this chat is quite gimply, but I like it. It works for this guy.
Yeah, like he would be a guy who would speechify, and it's believable.
Oh, yeah. I wondered if he knew Pope when he started talking about being in Vietnam and stuff. I was like, did you know a guy with a bad hat called Pope?
Can you never bring him up again? No, I'm just kidding.
Just kidding. Do you know Pope? Yeah, he sucks. I did laugh at the sort of the gearing up for the echelon briefing, the performance of like the gun on the table. Put your prosthetic in front of me, away from you. Like the scene setting was very incredible.
And looking right into the camera as he was delivering it, as if he was talking right to us at first.
Yeah. Reflect on your whole life. Yeah. Everything up to this moment. I was like, this better be a fucking great briefing, because the like the build up is quite a lot. I was 90% sure that tea was poisoned. They kept focusing in on it, and I was like, Rick, don't drink that. Rick, don't drink that. Rick, don't drink that. And then tangent time, I remembered about a friend of mine who accidentally tried to buy some ginseng tea and instead bought Korean women's diet tea, which is a laxative, and drank six cups of it and nearly had to go to hospital. So Peter and I were like, hope it's not that tea that our friend who shall not be named drank. So for the rest of it, we were laughing at the thought that Rick couldn't do anything because he would be like paralyzed with diarrhea.
That would be a twist.
It'd be a twist. Michonne, predicted that. You're going to have to do this on your own because I'm in a bit of a situation. Like,
I can't do it, Michonne. Come on, Rick. We've got to do it. No, really. I can't.
No, really.
Trust me.
Really. I'm in the John. It's going to be a while.
What time is this meeting at?
I killed General Beale, but bad news, I've got the shits big time. Like, so, yeah. I just thought, is it like truth serum? Has he been put? Like, the tea really stressed me out.
You always notice things I don't even know
the
there was tea.
The music was like, when the tea was there. And I was like,
that's good.
Peter was like, you just keep muttering to yourself, the tea is poison. And I was like, 7 a.m. Rick saying he killed someone with his teeth like they do, I thought was interesting because I'd never equated that act with being like a zombie in my head. And the fact that that's what he found shameful about it was like they do.
I think I mentioned that on the podcast way back when.
The Beale backstory, he talked about his time in the military. He talked about being in Vietnam.
Twice.
This idea about the Second Civil War fought on good Pennsylvania ground was fascinating to me. The idea of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia as the two fronts. He talks about using the dead mass to overwhelm the troops. I killed my past in a whole city so another could live. And that's how he talks. He brings us in to learn the first secret about the most likely outcome being that we're all going to die. He does this amazing image of like the earth as being cluttered with corpses, a strange temporary museum for a blink of its existence.
Very good.
He's great. Like you can see why people follow him. Like his rhetoric is top notch. And yeah, the rest of it, I think you've all covered about the martial law doing this. What I thought was interesting is, what's the most sinister, I think, about what he's saying, yes, people are going to die and are going to be killed, but also this idea that people within the Republic, once again, some of their freedoms will be delayed yet again. And this idea of keeping that freedom from people that I find the most sinister is it's finding excuses to never have them be able to do the things they want to do again.
Orwellian.
And it's interesting. Yeah. I was worried when he brought up Carl.
I thought Rick was going to jump right up and tear his throat out with his teeth when he said...
Honestly, I was like... But then when he was talking about, you will never have to suffer that loss again, you could bring them to us, they will be spared from our march. And that was the one point where I was like, they've set this up quite well. So, you know, that is Rick's biggest fear. We found that out in episode 4.
And he relaxed his grip on his knife for a second. And you know, part of you wonders,
you wouldn't blame him.
On that?
It's got to be tempting if someone tells you that you can never you can be guaranteed that you won't feel that loss.
But then just like if Rick did consider it for a minute or a second, and so did I think I dismissed it too. Like, no, he won't do that. You know,
I know.
No way.
Michonne's clicks kind of break conversation and Beale notices them and then tries to get Rick to swear on the sword. So we find out what Okafor meant by swear on the sword, but don't let it take, which I think means say you'll do it, but don't take it to heart and try and find other ways of doing things.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. That's what I thought. Swear on the sword, don't let it take. So swear on it, but don't let it overwhelm you and make you into a different person.
And I wondered if Rick would do just that, you know?
Yeah.
Pretend.
Well, that's Okafor's sensible advice is, yeah, okay.
But
yeah,
he fucking didn't, and I was shocked.
He's Rick Grimes. He's Red Rick. How the fuck is he going to do that? Look into my eyes. Yeah, that the drama of the moment of the two of them looking at each other was just so high octane.
I think just because Rick hesitated, because Beale said no. He knew that Rick was about to do something, but he caught it before Rick even did anything. I thought that was such a great moment. And then Rick throws his knife, buries it right into his chest. So good.
Goddamn Okafor. My son brought me back. I thought the line about one unstoppable life was a bit cheesy, but I liked we're not dead, you are. And then his immediate radioing Thorn to lie about where Beale is, saying he went to the woods.
I was like, because he stabbed him through the hand. That's when he, with his own sword, and that's when he said.
Oh, that's got to be so sore.
Yeah, and he said, damn, Okafor. And then he killed him, but it didn't really show him die. And then you see Rick calling Thorn, and I'm like, you better keep your eye on Beale over there, because I'm not so sure he's dead. But then next thing you know, he's carrying him around in that case with blood seeping out the bottom.
That is one of those things that, like, it trod a fine line between hilarious and very tense. Like, I was very tense in the lift, but then when I thought about it, I was a bit like
like
if you just change the soundtrack to the Benny Hill music. I mean, you change the soundtrack of anything to the Benny Hill music and it's funny, but that in particular was quite funny. Yeah.
Try Handmaid's Tale. No, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't think that would work. So that was my Beale spiel.
Love it. Beale spiel. That's good. Made me blow snot out my nose. when Beale, you know, he talked about that Civil War and he killed the people from his hometown so that he could get rid of the people who were trying to blow up Philadelphia. And that was sort of similar to what Okafor did. You know, he blew up Marines to stop them. I don't know how those two events tie in together, but presumably it was all part of this Civil War.
It was just Okafor and Beale left. They're like, well, I did one law, you did the other law.
Oh, crap. We need to communicate better.
Oh, shit.
At least we have each other. But those are dark things, but it's more like most of the things that Rick's done where it's to stop a threat, you know, and Beale went from that to, well, anyone could be a threat, so let's just kill them all. You know, that's the part that I don't quite can't get on board with.
It's a swing.
Yeah. I loved all of that. His past, his alcoholic father. I mean, just the whole scene that was drawn out in several beats interrupted by other scenes between Rick and Beale, I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it, and it was just as good a part of this episode for me as everything else until the end, which was the best when they had the reunion. And it was so tense. It was interesting to think about Beale and be like, how much of this do I agree with? And him as a charismatic character, but also the tension of Rick grabbing at his knife, and it was just a very tense scene. And then to have the satisfaction of him actually attack, and then they have a fight, which was great, you know, at the end. And it was just all very well done.
I think it depends. Like, I was thinking about this when I was listening to the feedback episode, because I was thinking about Veronica, who's a kick-ass scientist. So Veronica and I are both both have doctorates in different fields. So Veronica's got a doctorate in science, I've got a doctorate in literature. And we often agree on a lot of the same things. And I was thinking with what Beale says about statistics and projections, I'm always like, but what about if it doesn't happen like that? What if something, what if there's a butterfly effect? What about hope? What about beauty? What about art? This is why I would die within the first 5 minutes of somebody walked up, 'cause I'd be like, I'm going to be a bard. and I just thought it's so interesting that we can come to these things with different perspectives and find common ground in the zombie apocalypse. But I would find, absolute certainty is so difficult. And if someone said to me, in 14 years, we're all definitely going to die, I'd be like, but what if we don't? We don't know. We can't predict. Who'd have predicted 10 years ago where we'd be now?
And that's, World Beyond was about all that too. You know, Elton started off as very pessimistic about the future of humanity and came around.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love everything you're saying about science and predictions and modeling out but not knowing for sure, and that was Beale was just spent all this time laying out the reasoning for why he's doing what he's doing and why you know that humanity is going to die in 14 years and all this, and then Rick's counter to that was the world isn't going to end. And that's it.
Yeah. I'm definitely the Rick in that situation. I'm like, no, it's not. Why? No, I don't know. It's just not. Love.
You don't know.
Love and stuff. What if love he's and right?
What if he's right? What if this is the only way to save humanity? And Rick and Michonne are like, well, we care about love. And then they end up causing everyone's death. It could happen that way in some world. I mean, it won't in this story because that would be a lame story. But you never know.
So, like, here's what I'll say.
Sentimentality. Here's
what I will say. I think that, yeah, the facts are probably right. The maths is probably right. But how we get there and how we prevent it are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, because Beale also talked about not just the dead, but I can't remember the words he used, but he was kind of talking about the things they talked about in World Beyond about, are there enough resources for the people that are here, you know? And we struggle with that in the non-apocalyptic world. But you don't kill people to take care of it because there aren't enough resources. You figure out how to produce more resources. And I just think a good way to motivate people to care about each other and figure things out is to care about each other, you know? I mean, just to value caring about even people that you don't know. And if you have that care in society, then you'll be in a society where we take care of each other. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. I want a society where we all want to take care of each other, not everyone else's competition and do your best and fuck everyone else. I don't want that.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. That sucks. That's not a world I want to live in. Exactly. Yeah. Like Michonne said to Rick, what kind of a world are we leaving them if, you know, we let this kind of thing happen? And I think that's true.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So that was great. I want to talk about Jadis's dossier a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Cat butt dossier.
I don't have the complete text, but more than enough to get the gist, and I'll read the parts I managed to transcribe. Did you do any of that?
I did not. So okay. I'm interested in this very much.
So there's a lot that was blurred out, but something traded the injured Rick Grimes, who I portrayed as a something, is not a B, and I have a much deeper relationship than I had previously portrayed. Blah, blah, blah. Had battled him in an alliance with a third hostile community that had something consolidating power in the area. Rick led his own alliance of communities to defeat us. Blah, blah, blah. Further had paved the way for peace between all the parties concerned. He has demonstrated himself to be an A, and his community, Alexandria Safe Zone, has a number of blank blank within its walls. Further, Rick's wife Michonne is the individual known as Dana. Blah, blah, blah. She had searched for Rick, not knowing he was aboard, and had shot down his helicopter. My omissions have created a critical vulnerability for the Civic Republic, and I firmly believe that Alexandria, Rick, and Michonne must be destroyed. Blah, blah, blah. Something about that Rick and Michonne would return to Alexandria and let them know about the Civic Republic, and that information could spread to other places and compromise their security. Also, quote, Rick Grimes is a natural-born leader who has something, survivors under a single banner, his strategic abilities, something, something, a formidable opponent. Michonne, Rick's wife, is a highly something. Her unwavering loyalty to Rick and her relentless something, equally dangerous adversary. The Alexandria safe zone is organized and resourceful to secure the CRM's position and prevent something, something critical to eliminate Alexandria, Rick, and Michonne. So you get the idea. They're a threat. We need
to
kill them.
She had very different handwriting to what I was expecting. I thought she would have really
it was a bit girly.
I just was like, oh, it's very neat. I was like, oh, very neat handwriting. Yeah. Surprised me.
I wonder if, no, I doubt it. I was going to say, I wonder if Pollyanna McIntosh actually wrote that. Probably not.
Don't know.
All right. That's all. I just wanted to read a little bit of that. You got anything
else? I've got so much crap, man. I've got so much stuff. The shenanigans, the tension, just everything. I just want to talk about everything that happened in this episode. Even the dark, cold open with the panning in on them. I mean, panning in on them having this like lovemaking sesh before their big, the big shenanigans, shall we say. I was very pleased that they actually planned it. Rick and Michonne don't always plan things, so that seemed to work in both their favor. But that whole build up with all the voiceovers, it's never that simple. Oh, fuck my nerves at that point. I was like, oh God, someone's going to die. Sergeant Major Rick Grimes appearing at the gates like it's Alexandria. He told me it's just the burning, and then the credits come up. Oh yeah,
I didn't make that connection with Alexandria. I think there's a lot of
there's callbacks. I've got a list of callbacks
and echoes and things. Yeah,
I liked Rick and Weekend at Beale's go for a walk, which is when he's taking Beale into the lift. I just wrote, this is a balance of ridiculous, tense, and funny, but also tense, like the blood seeping, the lift taking forever. Michonne finding him. I mean, it was just all so good. I could go on and on about all the details in it, but I just really enjoyed the level of tension that they managed to create in this episode. And I did not relax until they were running off the helicopter at the end. I was like, so much has gone wrong. They're not going to get home. And I did laugh because I watched this on Easter Sunday, and when Rick exploded the zombies and then kind of walked through them, I've written like, Jesus, Rick is risen. Which is very OTT, but I was very, very stressed out at this point. I cannot emphasize this enough. So yeah, the tension levels were high.
And I liked the plan too, and that they didn't tell us what was happening. I mean, there was some artfulness in this episode for sure. The way that, like you said, it showed Rick and Michonne planning it out, but they dispersed that in chunks throughout the episode, you know, not in chronological order. And showing the grenades with the wire through it, but we didn't know what it was for. And she just said Nat gave her the idea somehow. And then showing that it was actually contingent on Beale and this other zombie to activate the grenades. I mean,
the poetic justice of that.
Yeah, right. Beale's the one who, and I thought that was clever and fun in a really twisted, fucked up way.
Only in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, right.
I have Thorne as well in this episode. You could tell she was going to go full bad when she Rick mentions Okafor, and she's like, no, Okafor died. He wasn't meant to be part of this. He wasn't right about everything. When she has the realization montage that Bethune is Michonne, we see Rick going all in on a game of poker, and I thought that was quite an interesting thing for her to see. But I was also like, did she not suspect this before? I don't know. Thorne just losing her shit, shouting, you destroyed our chance, you destroyed the whole world. It was something to behold.
We talked about being afraid for their lives the whole time. I think the part where I was the most anxious was when they successfully rigged the explosives and started to leave, and then Thorne showed up. I thought, oh fuck, this character is going to kill one of these two, and I we don't like her. I mean, I've tried to stand up for her a bit, but I don't want her to be the reason why Rick or Michonne dies, and that's when I was like the most anxious.
Yeah, I completely with you. I was like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck. I could just see her killing Michonne or Rick, And I yeah. mm-hmm. So that wasn't amazing.
It was good tension, but I'm glad it didn't happen.
Oh, the tension. And that moment where Michonne gets caught in Jadis's room with her foot because the letter pushes up against it, that was also very tense. You know, if there's one thing I've learned from watching shows like this, it's if you knock on a door of a room that someone's in and you say, like, hey, Jimmy, are you there? And they don't reply, don't go in the room. You're going to get killed. Like, just walk away. Get a friend. Get that's them to come true, with yeah. you. Arm yourself. Come in and don't get garroted. Like, yeah. that's my advice for you as listeners.
Especially when you're in a like militant place like this.
Also, when Michonne was ripping up the letter, I was like, honestly, burn it. Don't leave bits of it. Burn it or eat
she did
it.
Start to pick it up, but I was yeah, like, I was just like, put that in I was your like, pocket.
I was like, I get the dramatic effect, but burn it.
yeah. That would have been dramatic if she burned it.
Yeah. And Danai Gurira was just wonderful. Her eye acting was on point after that Portland briefing. I just was, oh, that little kid that looked like RJ, and it clearly shook her right to her core.
And they thought about, they used flashbacks really well for different purposes. It was really to show the things that they have had to do, but also when there was talk of threats, they would think about the people they cared about and just, you know, bring home that they would be in danger.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any further points or just notes?
I have one more. It's kind of a point slash note. It's the news voiceover. I thought it would be good to read through that. So they said the wide-ranging ramifications surrounding Operation N1W, which is what they called killing Portland and taking 10% of the kids. With the CRM's frontliner force and the CRM force command, including Major General Jonathan Beale, all casualties of the incident connected with shocking revelations regarding all their operations and activities. The CRC, which I presume means Civic Republic Council, voted unanimously for emergency oversight over the remaining forces of the CRM. So that means the people in town took control of the military. Command hierarchies and layers of operational secrecy indicate infantry units did not participate in the atrocities perpetrated by these highest levels of the CRM, thus presenting hope for immediate reform. That means all the soldiers that were left were not the ones who had the echelon briefing. They weren't complicit in the most heinous acts of the CRM, so they could still be a part of the community. And in another stunning unanimous vote by the CRC overturning CRM guidance, free movement has been established for the Republic. Citizens are now free to leave at will, and the city will now welcome new citizens as they may arrive. One new man named Negan is here. Well, let's have a word from him.
He sucks.
With oversight of the military now in the council's hands, the CRM's priority has shifted beyond the CR's defense to now engage with, assist, and even airlift any survivor or community they may encounter. So they're now, I mean, that's a big shift from like nobody can leave or come in to, oh, we're completely open to anyone. But anyway.
Very much.
It's cool. I liked it.
I have my list of callbacks.
Great. Yeah, I'm curious. What do you got?
In the first scene, we see some Johnny Walker Black Label. You may remember it was also featured in last week's episode. So a callback to Johnny Walker.
It's also a callback to Hyundai in a way.
Yes. we see their weapons and wedding ring laid out on the ground. Well, the wedding ring is getting handed to Michonne while they're doing it. But we see a hatchet and a kind of sword, not the katana, but she gets her katana back at the end. Mm-mm. Rick must have reclaimed it. Yeah, she does. I think she very end.
Oh, at the very end. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, when they're reunited.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
We also see there's a can of orange soda out, which made me think of Denise. I don't think know if it was deliberate or not.
I bet it was.
Yeah. We see the phone with Michonne and Judith on it. The metal cat is a callback, as we mentioned earlier. Jadis's art, her portraits, pictures of Gabriel and tormented faces. The literal flashbacks, we see the governor, we see Negan, the claimers, Terminus, the prison. Michonne dealing with Jocelyn's group. We see Carl, we see flashes of Maggie, Eugene, Daryl, Carol, Ezekiel, like all the OGs. He says it's just the burning is what Rick's dad tells him when he's caught burning the farm down in episode one. Mm-hmm. Even Okafor, I think, was a little callback. One callback in episode 4 where Rick says we can make this whole damn world ours if we want. And Michonne says, sounds like something I would say, but Luke's confused. She said it in a dream. I forgot this until I saw it in the... I was like, oh, that makes sense. Yes. And Michonne walking around and picking up a cuddly bunny rabbit reminded me of episode 1. When we see the little girl picking up the cuddly bunny rabbit. So yeah, lots of callbacks. How about you?
Just a little taster for how great the listener feedback episodes have been. If you guys haven't listened, I'm going to read one from somebody right now.
Amazing.
And that's Teresa Harper, who wrote, after watching episode 6 of The Ones Who Live, seeing that stuffed bunny, it dawned on me that in season 11, episode 1, Acheron part 1, Maggie stumbled upon a stuffed bunny in the tunnel of the subway on their quest to Meridian. Daryl also finds a Polaroid picture of two kids holding a stuffed bunny. In the finale of The Ones Who Live, Michonne finds a stuffed bunny lying on the floor of the CRM. The bunny reminds me of that orange backpack that the man in the red poncho was carrying and resurfaced throughout the series of The Walking Dead. And then Dina said Lydia had a bunny. And of course, the bunny in the pilot, right? The little zombie girl.
Yes.
And Aaron found baby Gracie in the Savior's compound with a stuffed bunny in her crib. That was actually the same prop that little, you know, the younger Lydia had when we saw her backstory with Alpha.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
It's the same prop. I read TWD prop master John Sanders had two rabbit plush toys made after Scott Gimple asked for a velveteen rabbit. And they found the perfect one on Etsy. It was this actually Scottish artisan. And they asked her, can we make 10 of these? And she said, no. And they said, we're from The Walking Dead. And she said, no. And they explained it to her, like, we really need these and we love what you do. And so she made 2. And and she was excited about it. But and then Judith also had one of those in a dream sequence of Carl's before he died. Apparently, I read that. I don't remember it. But anyway, so apparently this bunny has popped up in tons of places.
Oh my God. The bunny is the ultimate Walking Dead spinoff master.
That's interesting.
That's really funny. Bunny, bunny. Did you have a toy when you were a kid?
Yeah, I had toys. I had a little Snoopy plush, you know, stuffed animal that I gave to a girl. This is a horrible story that I had a crush on in kindergarten. And then I was crying at night because I didn't have it. So I asked her for it back.
Oh, did you get it back?
Bad. I think she gave it back to me, which was...
Okay, that's good that you got it back.
Yeah, but I feel bad about it now. Shouldn't have given
it
away.
Yeah, but also, you know.
What about you?
I had a cuddly toy fox, but it was like a hand puppet you keep your hand in. I still have it somewhere, but he was my favorite.
What's the voice?
I didn't have one. You know, surprisingly for me, he didn't have one and he was a puppet. He was silent, but he used to mute. rub his face together. He's got like little bits missing from where I used to like rub it. That was mine. That was mine.
I mean, my favorite was my little Spider-Man action figure that I tied my shoelace around his arm and swung him around.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Played the crap out of that.
Oh.
All right, let's get into notes.
I don't have that many, actually. I have that. There's quite a lot of sex in this show. It should have been called The Ones Who Fuck. I loved Michonne's line about being certifiable. You don't leave people behind. This is the shit we do is some good dialogue, I think. And my final one is I think that Thorne yelling hands at Rick is really rude because he only has one now. So. Bit mean.
He's mean.
Those are
He's
my notes.
Good.
No.
Cool. I liked when, I think it was when they were just like rigging up the explosives. Rick said to Michonne, you know, Beale said I could lead the CRM one day. Like he's proud of it.
And she's like, shut up.
And it's like you said earlier, we've had so many CRM stories and build up and just Rick comes in and quickly ends it all. But I'm proud of Rick for interacting with the community and not taking it over. As far as we know, he left that to the
And he only killed however many people were at that moot. So, like, 2,273, probably.
I mean, ironically, they killed people to save people there. And
the burning.
I do wonder if they could have tried talking them out of it. They'd all been indoctrinated, I guess, but I don't know how much choice they had. Maybe some of them didn't really want to be doing what they were doing, but they didn't have any time for that. It was too risky to try. And also, it's a fucking drama, or, you know, action horror show. So they had to have this big moment. But to me, it feels a little, I was just making this point with somebody recently. I love the movie Karate Kid so much. But it's a lot about the characters in it. The good characters preach nonviolence. You know, Mr. Miyagi says, I'm teaching you karate so that you won't have to fight. And so it's all about not needing to prove yourself. But the final moment of that movie is Daniel just kicking the bad guy right in the face. So his head snaps back and it's the most satisfying thing ever. And it's like, yeah, that's what we're here for.
Sometimes people need a kick.
Yeah. In this case, it was chlorine gassing a bunch of people and seeing them turn into zombies.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I just wrote, like I said before, this felt like an ending. I hope it's not the last we see of Rick, but at least we still have Daryl.
Yeah, I think I want to see Rick again, but I don't want him. I want him and Michonne to like come out of retirement one last time and both go back to retirement after and be safe and happy.
Yeah, that's with, where I'm at. So they can reunite with everybody else would be awesome if that's at all possible. And I think from what Gimple said, he wants something like that too.
I think this is the right place to end their story. And it sucks because I don't want it to be, but I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
To be mature about it, yes, this is a great ending. We want more than part of us, but if you're I mean, we don't want them to write a bunch of shitty stories about Rick and Michonne or something, you know? We don't
exactly.
And last, I think, given all this, that on the Daryl show, minor spoiler here, but we heard Carol on the radio with Daryl saying, came back. You know, it was
Rick.
Fuzzy. Yeah, it's got to be Rick, right?
It's got to be Rick.
And I think it's great that they put that in there rather than just not having her say anything, because it totally makes sense that Carol would want to say that to Daryl, knowing how much Daryl cared about that and spent so much time looking for Rick. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that too.
All right, that is our show, episode 575. Thanks for listening, everybody. That was good. I really wanted to make sure we did this episode justice, because I think it was pretty special, and I felt like we did.
We did.
So
we nailed it.
I mean, if we're grading ourselves,
yeah, we did so well.
Thumbs up. Next episode, I hope you guys agree. Next episode will be news and listener feedback for this episode, The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, episode 6, The Last Time. I've seen some of the feedback already. It's fantastic. I want to mention we're taking a little bit of a breather. I'm actually going on a trip to look at the eclipse that's coming up. So we're going Ohio, and we bought the special glasses and everything. So anyway, feedback episode will be out in about like 8 or 9 days or so, the end of next week sometime.
Yeah. And if you want to write in or leave us a voice message for it, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
While you're there, please check out our other podcasts. I see that our episode of Welcome to the Apocalypse is out.
It is. I listened to it on the train yesterday.
Oh,
thoroughly
really?
Enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, I'd forgotten a lot of the things that happened. Yep.
It was good. I'm afraid to listen because I'm self-conscious, but I want to see what effects that
it works.
What that Randy put on it.
I think if you're a listener of this podcast, you will particularly enjoy it because there's a lot of in-jokes.
Oh, right on. Yeah, okay, I gotta listen now. I want to say this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Michael Koska, who've pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonGabassi. Michael has been a listener, I think, since the beginning. I'm happy that you're along. I think you've like gone away a little bit, but come back, so it's great to have you back. Thank you, Michael, so much. Also, I want to mention, now that I'm talking about Patreon, that this segment we're doing, Tangent Time, we've decided, you know, for anyone who pledges $5 a month or more, our next topic is going to be our career paths. So the yes. career paths that you and I have taken.
Yeah, we will reveal our jobs. I'm a physician. I'm not. Yeah.
We'll be making it all up. So, yep. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening. Don't get bit, Elizabeth Ann Schwartz.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.